Blog Talk Radio.
That is the question, folks. I got to tell you, the announcement of this lawsuit that is going to be filed tomorrow, I believe, there's going to be a press conference taking place in California. A whole bunch of fighters are suing Zuffa in a class action lawsuit. And, you know, I actually just found out who a few of the plaintiffs, so I can't say. Obviously, because there are legal repercussions, no question about that. But I just, you know, just the individuals have not fought for Zuffa in some time. So, you know, I'm not going to give any more information on that. But this is really something because, you know, a journalist I was talking with earlier today, Eddie Goldman, actually made a very, very good point when he said that basically, they should be having these demonstrations in front of Zuffa, in front of the UFC building in Las Vegas, and that's what you do. That's how you get the most attention. You know what I mean? So just stay tuned for that. I will be on the conference call tomorrow, actually. Okay, I'm actually going to be phoning in, and hopefully I'll try to get a few questions answered. And, you know, it'll be a lively press conference. And good for the fighters. That's what we need. We need fighter solidarity, okay? I have no idea what the lawsuit is about. There has been some speculation about it being pertaining to antitrust laws. We'll have to see. That all should take place tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern time, 1 p.m. Pacific time. And I'm sure some of the Zuffa Shill sites are going to be covering this and whatnot. And so, you know, we'll have to see what happens. But today's show is a very, very special one. We have Tony El Kakui Ferguson on the program. So excited to speak with Tony Ferguson. I was really impressed with him, as a lot of people have been, since the Ultimate Fighter days when he was on Dos Santos, Lesnar, forget what season of The Ultimate Fighter he was on. And, you know, he was just really an impressive guy that was undersold by the UFC. I think that his coaches underestimated. He was picked fifth for that season. And he's had a great career. He's really on a roll. And he's only lost twice. His first loss was to Michael Johnson. I believe that was decision or a second loss, actually. His first loss goes further back at the beginning of his career. But this guy is on a tear. He's very, very disciplined, very, very focused individual, very motivated. And you know, you could just get the sense when you hear him that he was just driven, you know, just so focused on his fighting. He's been competing in wrestling and all forms of sports going back to when he was 12 years old. He's a really, really interesting story, and he's someone to look out for, too, in the lightweight division. And, you know, you've got a lot of guys in that division. I mean, you look at what Anthony Pettis did a week or two ago, just on another level. But there are so many intriguing matchups for Tony Ferguson to fight in the UFC lightweight division that it's going to be interesting to see who his next opponent is going to be. It could be Jim Miller, who, according to Tony, is ranked 10, whatever ranking system, website or whatever puts that information out there. But there are other people in the lightweight division that, you know, he could fight. You've got Ally Quinta that's fighting Joe Lauzon coming up, and that could be, you know, an interesting fight. Whoever wins that fight would be an interesting fight for Tony Ferguson. So you just got a lot going on in the UFC, which we now know, which we have known for almost a month now that they're going to be running so many different shows, something like 45 or 47 events coming up in the 2015 calendar year. And to me, I think it's, you know, where I stand, I think it's a little bit too much for the fans. I mean, even a guy like myself, who I don't follow MMA as closely as people I know, you know, people that write and people that, you know, are market approved and get paid to do this. But even for a guy like myself, it's difficult to follow these events because you never know where they're on. You never know if it's on UFC Fight Pass, if it's on Fox Sports 1, or if it's on pay-per-view. You just don't know where these fights are taking place. And, you know, we know that Zuffa has been in trouble. In my opinion, Zuffa has really been on the decline for several years now. And, you know, we saw a report a couple weeks ago where, according to, I think it was Moody's, they had a 40% decrease in profits. Or there's an estimated to be, I'm just going off the top of my head here. But the point is that Zuffa and the UFC are really not doing as well as they would like to project. Okay, yeah, I know they just, you know, signed the big deal with Reebok, and that supposedly their you know, it rivals their broadcast deals and whatnot. But I think you can look at some indicators out there and understand that the UFC is not doing that well. Okay, and of course we don't have any information regarding their finances because they're a private company. But you can look at things like the pay-per-view sales, you can look at things like the ratings, and some of the estimates, as I mentioned, all sort of paint a picture about the UFC. And so we're going to have to see what happens here. But on the other hand, Bellator, at least in terms of the ratings, have done very, very well. You had most recently, the Tito Ortiz versus Stefan Bonner fight card, which drew a huge amount of ratings. We had 1.8 million viewers at one point. I don't know what that show peaked at, but Bellator seems to be doing well. They've got a lot of money behind them. And anytime there's a viable alternative to the UFC, anytime fighters have options, that is a good sign for MMA. That is a good thing for fighters as well. So, all right, I'm going to shut up here, okay? And I'm going to play the Tony Ferguson interview. We had an opportunity to speak to Tony Ferguson earlier on in the day, and we're going to bring you that interview. It was really, really great speaking to him as well. And you'll get a sense. You know, one of the things that struck me, too, during the course of this interview was he seems like he has a very high fight IQ. There's just no question about that. When he was explaining, you know, how he got the choke on Abel Trujillo, the, you know, just the amount of analysis that goes into his fight game, that was impressive to me. Not surprising, because, you know, you have to be intelligent to improve. You have to be intelligent as it pertains to, you know, training and game planning for fights, all of these different areas that fighters must focus on. It's not surprising, but it just shows you the amount of analysis that these fighters conduct. I mean, you can even go to a fighter's nutrition and see, you know, how that, you know, analysis impacts their fight game and how that, you know, impacts their training, so on and so forth. So it was one thing that really stuck out at me is this is seemingly a very, very intelligent man when it comes to fighting. Very, very dedicated and very, very motivated. So without further ado, here is my interview with Tony Ferguson right here on Carson's Corner. When we come back, we'll go over some other news of the day. Ladies and gentlemen, our guest here today on Carson's Corner is Tony Ferguson. We really, really appreciate him coming on the show, especially after a huge performance against Abel Trujillo. Tony, how are you doing today?
Doing great, man. Just landed back in California, just ready to get back after it. I had some stitches after the fight, but those healed up, and I already let Joe Silva know that I'm ready to go.
Yeah, you seem like someone who attacks life and opponents with both hands. I mean, you strike me as being a motivated person and very well-disciplined person. I think those attributes, combined with your athleticism and fighting skill set, are starting to set you apart from most other fighters in your division. Let's talk about the fight with Abel Trujillo. I know fans are going to want to hear about that right away. I was somewhat surprised in the build-up to this fight that a lot of fans were picking Abel. I mean, I can understand somewhat because he is an aggressive fighter, and was coming off a huge win over Jamie Varner. But I think that the people picking him weren't analyzing the matchup that accurately. And as soon as I heard that the fight was made, I felt this matchup was a bad one for him in many ways that might have been more subtle to the average person out there. How did you feel about Trujillo as an opponent when the fight was offered?
Honestly, when I felt that I was fighting the Black Zillions again, it got me a little shook up because they already had an opportunity to fight me once. You know, when I fought with Michael Johnson, I made a lot of mistakes in there and they capitalized on it. You know, the footwork that they have in their camp was just, I didn't think Gable was going to have the footwork that he had. You know, I didn't think I was going to have to chase after him a little bit. I knew he was going to be a solid, heavy-hitted puncher, and his gas tank was going to be questionable. So, you know, the big thing in my idea in my camp was to just not be out-conditioned. So what we did for Danny Castillo is we honed in, zeroed in on some submissions that I was really good at, and we made sure that I drilled those over and over and over, like the arm triangle, and, you know, we did the rear naked choke a couple times. But we did really a bunch of drilling that we were just ready for him. So it didn't matter what he was going to present to us as far as a camp. You know, it was to weather the storm, maybe, you know, not take so many hard shots. You know, but he was slick. You know, I wasn't expecting straight shots. It was just really good footwork. And he surprised me with the footwork. But other than that, their camp didn't show me anything that I'm not, you know, not used to seeing in a fight. You know, he's a good fighter. I take my hat off to him. You know, he's a good wrestler. Took me down a couple times. I was pissed, actually. I shouldn't have got taken down. You know, I'm a better wrestler than that, so I'm kind of harsh on myself. But, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, this was a chance to really showcase your skills against another guy on a hot streak. I mean, this is basically a battle for a higher spot on the ladder, and you won. Interest in the fight started really heating up at the weigh-ins because lots of fans on the forum and social media were excited about the way Abel tried to stare you down with the angry look on his face. He wasn't in full Diaz mean mug mode, but he certainly was doing his best to you know, create an atmosphere out there. And you came out with the wrestling style stance, and a lot of people perceived that he had somehow won the face off. And I think that stare down actually revealed one of the key areas where you were superior to him before the fight itself even happened, and that you won clearly. And at the weigh-ins, how did it feel about the face-to-face stare down you had? Did you detect anything, you know, psychological?
Oh yeah, you know, I did. I know he was trying to get inside my head, but I didn't play that card. I've had a lot of different wrestlers back in the day try to either befriend me or, you know, become my enemy or just absolutely nothing. And it's usually those guys that do absolutely nothing that are the ones that get in your head. You're like, man, what is this guy has any personality? No, he's saving it for the cage. You know, that's exactly what I did. It was a battle of chess. I wasn't playing his card or his piece. I stayed cool, calm, and collected because I knew that when you exert extra energy like that, and you're wasting your time because you need that energy and that adrenaline dump at the fight. He was already, not necessarily I was saying that he was talking shit, but I think he was just trying to pump himself up. You know, a lot of people do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he chose to do that at the weigh-ins and a couple other spots. I just stayed calm because I knew the fight wasn't there. The fight was in the cage, right where it belonged. You know, maybe I can do some more stuff. You know, somebody gets in my head, maybe I'll start talking, but it just didn't feel right. And it felt like the wrestling stance was kind of cool because he was a shorter opponent than myself. And I had a good range for a weapon. And when I had that lower that level change in the wrestling stance, I was picking out different angles. People think it's goofy, you know, but I was looking at, like, uppercut angles. I was looking at his chin, looking at his neck, and seeing, like, in different areas which I could attack, you know, the most frequent. And it worked out. You know, I looked at his neck. I looked at his, I was like, well, he's got kind of a skinny neck. Everything's pretty big. I was like, if I go for an arm triangle, he's going to be able to fight it. But if I go for a naked choke, maybe, hey, check it out. You know, it's kind of hard to defend.
Well, you know, Abel is a real scary fighter, a real powerhouse. When he goes into the angry mode, he really can overwhelm people who try to meet him head on. He also looks exactly the way he fights, and it's definitely intimidating to the average person. Some people thought, as you said, you were clowning around, but I thought you had more of a shrewd appearance. They said that Abel wasn't buying your attempts to throw him off, but to me it was actually the other way around. He looked like he couldn't stop staring even if he wanted to. In some ways, the intensity was in control of him and not the other way around. You know, you looked, as you said, more relaxed and controlled out there.
That's the idea. When I'm more relaxed and controlled, I perform at a higher performance rate. You know, I know that about myself because I've been competing forever, and I'm just one sport. You know, fortunately for me, I just, like I said, I kept my head. I stayed focused, and I remembered why I was there. It was to get the finish. Last time I left it in the hands of, I'm not a really big second or third round finisher. You know, I'm usually that first round finisher, or, you know, it might go to the decision to the judges, and that shit wasn't happening again. Personally, I hope I never let that happen again, you know. And I just know I can weather the storm. Abel Trujillo brought the heat, but, you know, you're only as strong as you look inside that cage when there's nobody around.
Now,
you know, when there's nobody around, you have nobody to back you up. And when I saw his conditioning and check, I knew that time was my opportunity to strike.
Well, you know, a lot of media outlets thought that Trujillo won the first round, but he's obviously someone who comes out pretty hard at the start of fights. What was your recollection of the first round? Were you surprised when he tried to get you to the ground and ultimately, you know?
Oh, with the takedowns, I was surprised. But I knew, like, he was only going to do takedowns if his striking wasn't working. So that meant if he was trying to take me down, that I was already empowering my striking over him. You know, he gave me his hardest shot, and I reacted with it. I stood back up with it. And when he had his flurry of punches, you can go back in the drawing board. But my big thing is slipping punches. And when somebody slips, you take so much more energy out of their gas tank than when they connect. And it's just demoralizing when they miss. And so mentally, and, you know, you're just like, oh, self-defeated, because you're like, man, I just threw a bunch of shots at this guy. And here I am, I go against the cage, and I'm smiling afterwards because I knew it. I was like, oh, man, you just threw like 10 shots, and you didn't hit not one. I was like, you hit the big one, and then you were expecting for the kill. So I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, his energy level just dropped probably like 70%. So I was like, I need to weather the storm a little second on the cage, get off, and then just keep my cool, you know, get my bearings right. And you can hear Joe Rogan in the back saying, yep, he's got legs underneath him. And it was only until I started pumping out that double jab, really relaxed, throwing that solid right hand, boom, did I start getting in my groove. I hate that I have to get hit to start out like that, but hey, you know.
Well, you know, once you got back to the feet, like you said, you were starting to take over and you started to find your groove at the end of the round. Did you get the sense that he was gassing at the end of the round?
Yeah. You could tell he was gassing. I just started picking up my different shots. I started in my head, too. I was pissed because I started throwing a series of kicks to the same side, and I knew already, I don't know why I did it, I kept throwing them either way, and I just knew that he was training for that overhand right as soon as the kick is thrown. But I still threw it anyway, and, you know, they have a good squad over there. I was just wasn't thinking in the first part, and it took, you know, took a second for me to get my head rung to be able to be like, oh, shit, okay, don't want to do that kick again. Let's mix some things up. Let's find some angles. Let's move, and let's use our range.
Do you think anything in particular caused him to become fatigued, and was it a lack of conditioning on his part or something you did to make him lose his gas?
Well, he was prepared. You know, he had a gas tank. We don't just fight for the UFC for a reason. You know, you back it up, and I guarantee you, he was conditioned. I could see it. He came out in the second round. He had some energy spurts, but I'm one of those grinders. In the wrestling room, in the practice room, or anywhere I'm going, I just grind it out. I just know they're not tougher than me. You know, I won the Ultimate Fighter for a reason. It's because I can grind it out. You know, no matter how tough the opponent is, I know how to adjust inside that octagon. And it proved it on that night at UFC 181.
You know, once the second round began, he seemed to be going into desperation mode. He seemed not to want to fight standing up anymore. But when he tried to get you on the ground, you were waiting to take advantage. Let's talk about the way you set up the choke, which was a slick move. We've seen some fighters have trouble finishing with the rear naked, but you slapped it on so fast he couldn't defend it. You seem to be particularly adept with chokes. What factors go into that skill? Is it just practice and technique, or is it, you know, build and body type that are a part of it?
I've always been a leg rider in wrestling. So naturally, just barring the arm and keeping it really, really close and then, you know, going for cheap tilts for cheap points, that's my thing. So controlling my opponent right there is, you know, from face down, just how they're in wrestling position is just a natural position for me. Especially when you trap that leg, And I was already trapping the left leg so much that he was already counting on keeping it, like, down. Mm-hmm. I guess you would say when we were against the cage, it was a matter of hand chess. There was one point where I don't even use my hands to get my hooks in. I actually elevated one of his outside, actually his outside right leg, and I just fooled him with it. He went to go out to kick out the hook, and that's when I threw in that right hook. And I already knew it. I was like, well, his body weight's to the back, and just, you know, just calibrate in there. And when he was reaching for my hands, it was just a matter of hand chess. You know, I'm a chess player, and, you know, it was just until recently I started finishing on chessboard that I actually started finishing, you know, my opponents more. Now, you got to think it through.
Right.
You can't just use any moves to get you an advantage position at that point. When you see your opponent just gassing and you know that he wants out, you got to help him out. You got to take him out.
You know, I think the last fight with Abel showed the fans how good Tony Ferguson can be when things go right. However, as you mentioned, you had a closer call in the previous fight against Danny Castillo, and a lot of people criticized your performance. Talking about that fight yourself, were you definitely the one looking dangerous in that fight? I mean, I don't think people would argue when I say that Castillo was fighting for position at times just to survive.
Yeah, I agree. He was just fighting for position. I schooled him on every level of the ground. I was going in there to finish, but if I would have went for the finish and we practiced for the finish, it would have been over in the first round. I locked up that Darce choke, and the smart Tony would have been to push him against the cage and finish him standing. But I didn't. I went in there, and I kind of let my head get a little bit more of me because, you know, obviously that fight, we had a little bit more animosity. But it just took it in there, and I felt it necessary to try to school him on every part of the ground to make him so scared that he had to hold on for dear life. And it was only, I mean, literally that was it. You know, I hate to talk shit, but, I mean, the dude wasn't doing anything. He wasn't passing guard. He wasn't moving. I'm escaping. I'm hip moving. I'm presenting myself with kimuras, trying to go for arm bars, swim moves, you know, chokes, so on and so forth. And he didn't really show shit.
Yeah.
You know, in the hands of the judges and the refs, they were telling me, you were active on the ground, and that was the point. You can't just land somewhere and expect to win. You can't GSP your way in there. No way. You know, if you're going to do something, you got to have some ground upon. I mean, granted, he did a little, but I don't think he did enough to win the whole time. No way. Hell no.
Now, if I'm not mistaken, one judge voted for him, and the crowd was completely on his side. It was obvious that wasn't your peak performance on that night. What thoughts do you have on the way the fight went down and the fact that you didn't get the finish against Danny the way you have against so many other good fighters?
It just felt like I had to go in there, like in wrestling, if I even correlate it to something I'm talking about wrestling, you have a chance to pin somebody or you have a chance to tech somebody.
Right.
I went in there and I teched him. I technically beat him, and I wanted to make sure that my chips was more high level, that I wasn't afraid to take chances. People were like, well, why'd you go for the imanari, or you're going for shitty position moves? I'm like, dude, I'm creating positions, and I'm trying to create angles so I can finish. And not only am I doing this on purpose because of that, I'm getting mat time with it. So you think the next time I'm going to miss? No way. I already have two chances where I went for the imanari roll. I'm waiting for somebody to give me a big striker. I'm going to hit a low single John Smith ankle pick on him, and it's over. I'm going to hit up imanari. I'm going to go a heel hook or a knee slicer, transition into something else, toe hold. You know, I got these moves presented back, and now I'm not holding back anymore. I've had the mat time for these moves, and, you know, the rear naked choke, I finished somebody before, you know, Joe Schilling. And, you know, it worked, and it was there. But that's not one of my key moves. Now I'm resorting to my key moves, and I'm making those black belt level.
You know, you were particularly criticized by fans and media analysts for attempting flying leg locks and some other positions, sacrificing submission holds. And obviously, as a fan, I really want guys to try things that are creative and exciting. I don't see how, you know, anybody can argue against those in principle. But it's kind of a paradox in some ways. Fans want to see exciting fighters, but then you try to get a fight like that where you try something crazy and then they end up complaining. I mean, does that ever frustrate you at all, the mixed messages sometimes fans end up giving?
Yeah, it does, but I've got more fans now than when I started. You know, nobody was sure about my style.
Right.
You know, now they're like, well, okay, maybe we'll give this kid a chance, you know? I mean, he's got some jits, he's got wrestling. Yeah, it's always been up to me to try to be more colorful inside the octagon, and now I chose to do that. And my opponents, they're going to be more worried now that they have much more film to watch, where they're like, oh, shit, where do we attack this guy? You know, they're going to find the holes because they're going to have the whole team, but I'm looking at their film the exact same way. And that's got to be scary because I'm picking people apart in different ways. I'm not afraid. I've seen Pettis. I've seen Nurmagomedov. I shook both their hands. I think I got baby hands compared to my hands. You know, I got humongous great hands, you know, and I'm scary in there. I have conditioning to back it up, and I have a whole heart and soul to go with it.
Yeah.
You can't negate that. You know, you have to beat that pride, and you have to beat that iron chin, which can't be taught. You can't teach this shit. This is something that I've been growing up and learning. So, you know, look to them.
You've got some sights now on even more noteworthy opponents. I've seen names like Jim Miller, Al Iaquinta, Nate Diaz out there for potential opponents for you. First of all, I got to say that I'm way less interested in seeing a Diaz fight with you than I had before Nate Diaz's last loss. I mean, he really didn't seem to make an effort in that one. I mean, he's tough as hell, and I like his attitude, and I guess, you know, he was apparently hurt going into that fight, but missing weight and then performing badly makes me, you know, reassess his career, you know, and as most people out there would. And you're rising fast, and Nate, I think, has slipped down quite a bit. At this point, surely a fight between the two of you would be a mismatch.
I agree. I've had a lot of fans respond the same way. And I keep up with the UG, too, so, you know, I saw the article. You know, Dana's trying to clean up the UFC stuff, and, you know, Nate and Nick, they have their own thing. I can't hate on them. These guys, you know, from California, they're chilling, they're fighters, so... You know, if he's got some personal issues going on, hopefully take care of it, you know, and he'll come back strong. But I'm looking at, you know, top 10 people. And I've checked out, who's number 15? I've checked out Rustam Khabarov. I've checked out, who was the other one? Jorge, gosh, what's his name? Masvidal.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I've seen these guys fight, and I'm like, damn, who can fight to get to the level? I hate to talk shit, but I'm just like, I'm not impressed with their fights inside the octagon. You know, I'm looking at the top 10 where you have, it starts with Jim Miller. You know, him and Miller Bros over in New Jersey, they have a good thing going on. You know, they got a 4,000 square foot facility, you know, with just especially with mats. You know, and it looks like they're going over good stuff. I've already done my recon. You know, I've done this look at, you know, and I'm not impressed either. He fought Nate Diaz over in Jersey.
Right.
But if I have to stop at the 10th spot and work my way down, I'll do it. But like I said in the interviews or when we were at the post-press conference, when Khabib interrupted Pettis' little speech over there, I'm here. I said the exact same thing to Pettis, and I said it to Khabib. I didn't call one out. I called them both out. If they want to give me that fight, that's awesome. But the scary part is I'm lurking, and I'm picking them off one by one. You know, the last person that did that was Anderson Silva. You know, I plan on being great in this sport and leaving my mark inside the Ultimate Training Center. So in order to do that, you have to be great to become a legend. You know, I don't be a hero. I won't be a legend.
Now, one thing's for sure, I don't think we'll ever see you coming in overweight by 4 pounds. I mean, you seem, as I said earlier, to be a very disciplined and serious fighter. You know, you certainly have the professional aspects of fighting down. And Jim Miller is another interesting name. We've had him on the show. He's a very tough fighter. He's had some bumps in the roads recently, but he's still incredibly solid and quite a big name. And I think you'd be favored in that matchup as well, as long as you were able to effectively, you know, combat his top game. Al Iaquinta, I think, would be a good fight, and that's one I would strongly advise any matchmaker to try and put together. Talk about fireworks. I mean, give me your thoughts about Iaquinta as a potential opponent.
I'm actually he's actually a pretty chill dude. That'd be a good fight. I know we would bring it. They would both train hard. I know he's got Joe Lozon coming up. That's going to be an interesting test for him because Lozon's got a lot of mat time inside that octagon. And Iaquinta's got a lot of tricks up his sleeve. You know, I agree he's got some. He's got some good stand-up and he's got some good ground game. Very aggressive fighter and has the condition to back it up. Joe Lozon's got a ton of heart.
Right.
You know, it's going to be a test of wits out there, I think. And, you know, I think Joe Lozon's got an opportunity to go in there and, you know, make his way back. But if Iaquinta stays sharp the way he has been, you know, it's going to be a good fight for him. And I'd like to take that fight right after.
Well, you know, when he fought Mitch Clark, landed a choke on him, or he choked the Iaquinta out. How does that make you feel about your submission skills against Iaquinta?
My submission skills are getting better every single day. With the more flexibility comes more moves that I'm able to do as far as even in the rubber guard. You know, when you have an opponent like Iaquinta, you have to mix it up. You can't just make it a stand-up pissing fight. Same thing with Trujillo. You just can't do that. You have to go in there and remember it's mixed martial arts. Otherwise, this guy's going to mix martial artists his ass on you. You know, it's not going to work that way. So you have to be prepared for absolutely everything. And with a fight like Al Quinta, it's another chess game. You're going to go inside there, you're going to look for opportunities and openings and previous victories that other opponents have had. You know, I'm not one to use the gateway, the blueprint for other opponents. You know, I like to go in there and do something a different way and finish another way. It's just my thing. You know, and for him, I have to go, I haven't watched too much film on him, but I just brushed up on it. But I know it would be an exciting fight, and, you know, I'm not trying to interrupt his fight with Joe Lowe's on right now, but it would be an exciting fight. I know you fans will get your money's worth.
Well, you know, you definitely seem to be someone who concentrates on finishing, not just hitting a guy hard or setting up the submission. I know that was a mantra for you going into the fight, to finish him above all else. And do you think carrying that attitude where you focus intensely on winning decisively is part of why you're able to do so? I mean, some fighters clearly don't have that same attitude. I mean, I'd say almost a majority of fighters at the top level basically try to play it safe when they think they can.
I can't. From what I want to do, I can't play it safe. I just can't. I don't want to. I've never been that kind of guy. I've always, you know, been, let's score a touchdown. Let's do this. Pin this guy the fastest. Let's, you know, hit the biggest grand slam, you know, or something like that. I've always been that. You know, for me to go out there and perform, I just want to start my last performance and come out, regardless if I come out victorious or not, and I'll say this honestly, if I give it my all inside that octagon, then I won't hang my head. I won't. I won't do that at all. You know, I would give my opponent the graces if I do lose and be on my way, give myself a day, and then hit the fucking drawing board again. That's something that's been embedded in me since I was little. You know, and I continue to work on it now. Well, if I don't quit inside the practice room, I'm definitely not going to quit inside that octagon. You know, wait until I get into that, you know, that top five spot. And people are going to have video on me, and I'm going to have mitt work, because I've been a ninja this whole entire time. I made it to this spot without putting out all my crap out on the media and trying to get attention and do this and that. No, I've worked my ass off to get to where I'm at. It proves it inside the practice room, and it proves it inside the octagon. I take bumps and bruises just like everybody else, but it's a fight. And my skill levels are getting better, and I won't, you know, hopefully I won't get hit the hardest next time.
Is it true you went to Catholic school?
I went to public and a Catholic school.
Now, some people find that sort of environment, Catholic school, restrictive, and they end up rebelling against it, but others find it that it gives them structure and discipline they need to make it through the confusing and stressful teenage years. How did you get into wrestling and all the other sports?
Oh, boy. I got into wrestling from my stepdad. He's not my stepdad, I guess you'd say, but he, you know, we don't have the same bloodline. You know, he stepped in the picture when I was really little, and they found it was a way just to keep me involved in school. You know, school, I've always had a hard time focusing in school. So the more sports I played, the easier it was for me because I had the extra energy to exert. You know, and wrestling was just one of those ways to, as far as self-defense. I could understand my dad not wanting me to get into karate or something. I'd be karate kicking everybody, you know. But instead, he threw me in wrestling and baseball, football, and just played my whole entire life, man. I wrestled in college over at Grand Valley State. And, you know, I ended up winning nationals over there. And I actually went home, actually, just not too long ago, and I got to go see the wrestling room where it all ended over in the college area, where that set the pace for me today. You know, we preach over there at Grand Valley State that teamwork makes the dream work. And, you know, without your team and without that guy next to you training, it's hard, man. It's hard to do by yourself. So that's what I present to the table, where wrestling has gotten me to where I'm at.
And I know
one of those.
I know you've done very well in basically every athletic you've tried, unless you're terrible at Frisbee or something. But did you have the same attitude as a wrestler, as a fighter? I mean, were you going out there looking to dominate and get the pin?
Exactly. Not just a pin, but a technical pin. You know, like, if we were to get mat time out there and I would just go out there and just wrestle, I wouldn't learn anything. But if I go out there and I try new moves and I try to technique and get more points on the guy and get a bigger score, and then it makes the pin that much more easier because your opponent's more demoralized. He doesn't have a chance now. He's like, man, I'm already down. I already have, like, how many takedowns do I have? He's taking his head. He's trying to calculate the points. And when he's doing that, he's already losing. You know, instead of worrying about it, me getting taken down, if he takes me down, that's fine. I'll get up 1 point, I'll take him down, that's 2 points, and then I'll throw him on his back, and that's another three coming my way. And then I'll go for the pin. So when these guys are thinking that I'm just going to get the takedown, I'm thinking in my head, hey, one takedown is worth 5 points. Why? Because then I'm going to put you on your back with the takedown. And that's something that we've been preached over at Grand Valley. You know, we don't just get 1 point. If we get taken down, we're getting back up, because 1 point is better than a reversal only two. Because I'm going to get it up, and then I'm going to take you down. That's three. That's the whole mental game that I kept.
What awareness of other combat sports did you have when you were wrestling? I mean, was fighting something you had an interest in all along, or did you sort of, you know, become interested in MMA as your wrestling career developed?
I was more boxing. I was one of the box, and I've had a speed boxing as a youngster, and that's why I'm able to hit it the way I am today, you know. And just boxing was one of the things I always wanted to get into, and never had the opportunity. And when I moved to California, I was just looking for something, and a guy presented me with a card and said jiu-jitsu, and shit, I took the opportunity. I went in there, and I wrestled everybody. I outschooled them on the wrestling mat. And when somebody wanted to try the jiu-jitsu me, it didn't work. I was just too scrambly. And it's taken some time to refine to where I'm at right now, trust me, because I was that wrestler, you know, getting with armbar with my arm on the ground and keeping my head where it is and then getting guillotined. You know, I started from the bottom, literally, and learned my way to where I'm at. And it's been a long and lengthy process, but I definitely had to drop my ego and a ton of times to be able to get to where I'm at, you know, to be able to be coached. And I think if a lot more fighters were able to do that, I think they would get much further.
You appeared on the Lesnar vs. Dos Santos season of the Ultimate Fighter show. And I wasn't aware of how good you were, you know, at the time, but even then I was a little surprised you were picked fifth, which seems absolutely insane in retrospect. I mean, obviously the coaches misjudged your talent. Any idea as to why that was?
I don't know, because I didn't really hype it up, maybe. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the one that was in their ears saying how good I was. I didn't have to do that. You take one look at my damn cauliflower ears and you can kind of guess that I have a little bit of mat experience.
Right.
So then when... you know, they threw us in the cage for Dos Santos. You know, like, their team, I wasn't really wanting to go on their team. I know a lot of people wanted me to, but what team do I want to go on? Do I want to go on a team that I'm not familiar with, the striking and, you know, presenting jiu-jitsu? That's not really my forte. What's my forte? The grinding, let's beat them up, let's do wrestling, and let's go forward that way. So when we were in the cage for Dos Santos, I was half-assing it. You know, I was sandbagging it, so... For one, I didn't want to get hurt, because there was a shitload of people in there. They stuffed in, like, all of us in one cage, and they had us do MMA, and that's how Miles Jury got hurt. And I was like, no way. I just kept my back to the cage, and this guy wanted to take me down. I'm like, go in there. And I was like, shit, this is only practice? Whatever. So when he threw it, I mean, I literally, like, it was sandbagging inside the octagon for that first one. And then we go to Brock's team, so he does the picks, and... I get taken down like one time, and Marty Morgan goes up to me. He's like, did you let him take you down? I was like, yeah, I thought we were drilling. He's like, no. Don't you ever let him take you down. Don't you let anybody take you down. Okay? And it took a coach like that to be able to click with it. And that's why then I was like, okay, cool. Then they saw how my heart was, and then they saw my conditioning, and then they saw everything, you know, as far as like my hands go. And they knew, I told them, I was working my boxing. I was like, my wrestling's my key. And so they were like, yeah, you know, we'll try to... I don't know what they thought for the picks. I thought it was shitty.
Yeah, well, you know, I even felt like the UFC may have misjudged your talent as well. And I'm talking about when you had already made it to the finals. And we saw them promote guys like Uriah Hall and Felipe Nova like crazy before the seasons were even over. But they weren't quite as vocal about you or Ramsey. And both of you guys were particularly dominant. You know, the guys were very dominant. So, I don't know, maybe they thought... you know, you were going to win the finals regardless. I don't know.
They brought Ramsey out second, so they favored him to win. You know, usually the guys brought out the last, you know, gets favored to win. But it didn't matter, dude. I mean, fighting at the Palms was an awesome thing. Fighting for my first fight in the Ultimate Fighter House was amazing. You know, it was on my birthday, so it was a lot more nerve-wracking. But you get self-confidence in there. You know, Dana's like, hell of a job, kid. And you get Brock saying, oh, yeah, hell of a job. And you get a little bit of confidence booster when you have, you know, people like that say, good job. You know, so these fights in this tournament, I'm glad it's over, but I missed the food, you know, as far as there. You know, I got to eat a little bit more because I fought and was happier at welterweight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it made me much more of a happier fighter, and I was able to walk around at weight and not have to worry. Now I have to cut weight,
right.
And which makes me a little bit meaner. You know, I'm a big 155-pounder, You know, even though I competed at 170, I wrestled in college at 184. Mm. And we actually had needed a spot to fill, and I actually was the one to fill it. But I was weighing at about, like, 175 and wrestling at 184, and they were huge. So I'm no stranger to big dudes like Abel Trujillo or Danny Castillo, and but it's not something I'm not used to.
Right.
So, you know,
yeah,
I mean, these guys, if they've never wrestled before, it's hard for them. They're only used to one size person.
And you're disciplined enough where you can easily cut the weight down, so ultimately it works in your favor. I know that you ended up having an association with Brock Lesnar beyond the show. You were with him training at Death Clutch for a while, weren't you?
Yeah, we were at Death Clutch. It was really nice, actually. Just secluded. It was a way for me to just focus because, I mean, without that, it would have been so hard to focus and, you know, not have people come around all the time and bug me and ask me, hey, did you make it? Did you not make it? Did you make it? It would have been pretty bad, you know, been in a pretty shitty situation. But they offered, they saw my hard work, and they saw that I messed around, and they just knew. They took a chance on this kid, and, they, you know, they gave me an opportunity to get my shit together, you know, to be able to put everything in, give me the coaching. And it really worked out, man. Instead of just being like the sport coaches, well, they're pretty good mental and life coaches. You know, they really did help me out.
Well, I got to tell you, that must have been a very intense environment at the time because Lesnar, I believe, was an active fighter. Can you describe the gym and who was training there, plus what the sessions were like?
Oh, the sessions were amazing. Badass gym, right in the middle of nowhere. You walk in, you know, you have like the... Your equipment on the right hand side. They get you in cardio shape, good conditioning. Had some weights. They had a sauna, plenty of mat space. Good artwork on the walls. I mean, he was sponsored by Everlast, so he had an Everlast cage, brand new damn cage. And it was like when these guys were practicing, they were having dinosaurs in there. And it was crazy. You just like him, Pat Barry, Tuscher. You had who else? You had a Bellator champ that was like 7-0. Cole Conrad.
Mm.
Who else did you have? I mean, you just had all these big dudes in there, and then you had myself, the little guy, you know, but big guys didn't train with little guys. You know, Pat Barry was there. He would help me with my stand-up. Then he brought Rose, you know, and eventually Marty ended up hiring a couple guys like Nick Lentz and Jake Volkman to come and kick my butt inside there. You know, I'm still green, you know, by the time I'm there. I'm green with my jiu-jitsu, and these guys are just eating me up. And it was like, guard, what's a guard?
Yeah.
You know, as far as jiu-jitsu, and they're gonna pass your guard. Okay, wham! You know, and these are the practices, the grinding practices that I needed. Ramsey had Court McGee and a couple other people at the pit, but Death Clutch was just a whole different animal. It was just an intense way to just get in shape, mentally prepared, and be on that status that Brock was on, be on that high level, competitive level, and it was awesome.
Well, you know, speaking of Brock, there were rumors, all sorts of rumors, that he didn't take face shots in sparring. A lot of fighters actually were adopting something like that, or at least, you know, lessened the headshots that they were taking during sparring. Was there any truth to the stuff about how Lesnar sparred or didn't spar?
No, heck no, man. That dude went balls to walls. It proved inside the thing. When we went for headshots, it was actually only until Pat Barry actually was... really cool. He was just a really good striking coach.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he had it, he taught Brock how to hit lighter and to use his hands more, but not necessarily lighter, but to be able to punch sitting downwise, I guess you'd say. And Pat would leave his chin out there and be like, go ahead, just touch, boom, boom, touch, boom, touch, boom, 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 touch, boom, boom. And you can see the transition between when Peter, I forget, Russell, boxing coach, and then when Pat started messing with his stand-up. You just saw a difference. You know, I think Brock has an awesome opportunity if he wants to come back to be able to get his hands together and he has some pretty damn good boxing. You know, I think it'd be awesome.
How obvious was it that he was seriously sick? Because we know that he had a lot of health issues and there were some reports that, you know, the health issues that he had actually almost killed him.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really get into it too much. That was his personal information. You know, I'm sure he doesn't want absolutely everybody in it. But I know I felt his pain. I could see him. I saw Brock in a different eye, and I'm not going to ruin that for him. But it sucked to see him go through that as far as a coach and to see him, you know, as even as far as a fellow wrestler. I just, you know, we pray for him and just hope that he would become better, you know. And luckily he is now and competing to where he is today. You know, he's a superstar in that sense where he, you know, he does what he has to do, but with hard work. And when you have something like that set you back, oh man, it can change you.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, part of the reason I asked to get your thoughts on a potential comeback he might make is because I think a lot of fans in the past have been unfair to Lesnar. You know, even though some of his behavior was a little unusual, I think that he went through a lot, and you know, he really was a workman. And you know, now you look at somebody like CM Punk, who you know, the UFC signing of him made great waves throughout the MMA community and the world. And I just don't know if he's going to have the pedigree to be successful in the UFC as Lesnar did, you know, with his background, with his physicality and whatnot.
You know, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know who they're going to throw at him. But, I mean, this guy has, what, a little bit of background in Kempo Karate, and he's been training jiu-jitsu. That's as far as what I've got. But I hope they give him a decent opponent. But you can't just expect to have a certain background and then sign with the UFC and then do great. You're going to have someone that's going to train harder than you, that they're more experienced in this art. And it's not, I'm not saying wrestling's fake, but it's not as sugar-coated as wrestling where you get to hype everything up and then be ready. If your opponent doesn't get inside that mental game and you go in there, you're going to be made an example of. And with Brock, he had much more natural talent because, you know, he's been to that top pinnacle and competed at the top level over at Minnesota. You know, and he's been in front of thousands, you know, people, and he's competed, like I said, he's competed at that top level. CM Punk has done the same thing. But it's a whole different animal. You can't just, I mean, expect to have, like, I would recommend it for him to go have a fight in the lower league and then come up,
right.
You know, if he doesn't have any fights. You know, because the person that he's going to fight is not going to take him lightly at all.
That's true.
You know, good luck to CM Punk, and I hope he brings much more attention to the sport.
Well, Tony, it's been great having you on the show. We really appreciate you joining us, and I hope we get you back on in the future for an update. Let's give the fans out there info for social media and such.
You guys can check out my website at www.TonyFergusonMMA.com. I try to keep it updated. But if you want to keep really up to date, on my Instagram is TonyFergusonXT, same as Twitter. And please follow me on Score.com if you haven't already, at Tony Ferguson. And just keep up to date with everything that's going on. You'll hear about my next fights. And I just want to send a shout-out to my sponsors, DFXSports.com. These guys are just amazing. You know, they helped me since I broke my arm. And we have a pretty big following, guys, and it'd be awesome if you guys could follow me on my way to victory at the next UFC.
Absolutely. Thanks again for talking to me. I hope you get a big fight next, and I hope you deliver another big performance, Tony Ferguson.
Hey, thank you, Bob. Appreciate it, man. You guys are awesome.
Take care, my friend.
All right, you too.
I got no soul. Life in prison, no parole, no control. Who done got my number on a wiretap? Cause I jacked for Similac. Fuck a Cadillac, so fine. One motive, no focus. Every sidewalk and walk is like a tightrope. Yes, I know my deadline, sire. With my life in fire, the second thing is that under the barbed wire. The mother of my John, a loser, my at my grave. It's my life for their life, so call it a free trade. Well, neither am I even born a star. I took a death trip when I tried to cross. We'll be right back.
we're back on Carson's Corner. My name is Bob Carson. Big thanks to Tony Ferguson for allowing us to interview him. It was a great interview, and make sure to support his sponsors and make sure to support his career. I also want to tell you that we're working with a group now called the MMA Latest News. They have a website called MMALatestNews.com, and we joined a Facebook group, and we're basically sharing our content, and hopefully, you know, sometimes I believe this group actually shares or provides content for the underground forum, and so hopefully, you know, it'll work well, and we can spread the show out, because as you know, Carson's Corner has been on the underground, has been part of the underground going back to 2006. Okay, I mean, can you believe it's going on 10 years? It's unbelievable. I remember when this show first started. And by the way, I'm also posting most of my shows now on YouTube. Okay, so some of the shows which I said go back to 2006, we're posting them on a site called Spreaker, and we linked up our YouTube account with Spreaker, so that when you post on Spreaker, the audio file, it goes right to YouTube as well, and it'll be on YouTube forever. We just posted a 2008 interview we did with Josh Barnett, which is classic. We also posted another 2000 interview we did with Eddie Goldman, where Eddie and I spoke at length about the Fertitta family history and station casinos, and we took questions from the legendary forum Fight Sport. And all of this is available. What a great show it was. One of the best Eddie Goldman shows that we've done a long time. And that's up on YouTube at youtube.com/BobCarsonMMA. That is youtube.com/BobCarsonMMA. Everybody now on the forums is anxious over this UFC lawsuit. A lot of speculation out there. Okay. I know of a few of the plaintiffs, okay, and I can't divulge any information. I will say that the guys that I'm aware of haven't fought in the UFC in a long time, okay, and this is going to be filed tomorrow. It's going to be made public tomorrow. There's going to be, you know, press releases, the names of the plaintiffs, the issues, and everything, and I only think this is good. I don't see how this – because I care about – the welfare of the fighters. And that's one of the main concerns that I have for this program, is that, you know, you look at some of the things now, you look at some of these fighters, and they say the average mixed martial art fighter is making $11,000 a year, and now the UFC just signed this deal with Reebok, and now starting in I believe January the upcoming year, 2015, you're going to have UFC fighters wearing Reebok, and there's this big, you know, sponsorship deal where UFC fighters are not going to have the banners anymore, and it's this big debate that's ongoing, and supposedly, oh, the UFC is not making any money off of this, and, you know, we're thinking long term and everything like that. Well, you know, if you got fighters that, you know, are going to be making money off of this, okay, what is it, 20% royalties they get from the merchandise sold with their name on it and stuff like that. That's good. I don't know. You know, we'll see. Some of these sponsors have been with fighters for years. And so this is, you know, I guess this is like people are divided on this. But, you know, the UFC roster is so bloated now. As I mentioned earlier, it's difficult for guys that even get paid to do this, to follow the UFC events and you know, follow the fighters. It's just, you know, one after another. It's difficult to keep up. And these fighters are rapidly depreciating. And I can't imagine what it's like for some of these guys that haven't fought in the UFC for a long time. I mean, even the guys that fight, the guys on the roster that fight a few times a year, it's like, these guys are, you know, one or two fights they lose, they get an injury, they're done. That's it. It's this economic system. It's this massive, you know, depreciation of fighters, which ultimately suit the owners of the organization, that leads to conditions where people, you know, have to sue this billion-dollar company to get the treatment that they should receive. You know, it's all wealth was created by the fighters. There's no question about that. And I can't imagine some of the condition that these fighters are in now that haven't fought possibly for the UFC. Again, we don't know what the details are of this lawsuit. We don't know, you know, what's going on, but I would be willing to bet that this is, you know, coming from people that have just been, you know, exploited. This is coming from fighters that really have no connection to the UFC and you know, the fight game, and possibly because of the UFC. We know that the UFC has been investigated for antitrust violations, I believe, two times. And, you know, this is it all goes back to the economic system that we're seeing right now, okay? And this is something I speak about on my podcast as well, Carson's Corner, the Political Edition, which is a very, very important show on this channel as well, blogtalkradio.com/Carson's Corner. And this is an ongoing fight, ongoing struggle, and we've been talking about these issues for years now on Carson's Corner. Okay, and there are a few other places that actually talk the way we talk about these issues. There are few, you know, I always say that many of the so-called MMA media, they're market-approved hosts. They're Zuffa market-approved hosts that are not going to – they have, by and large, a pro-capitalist attitude, a you know, business-like attitude that unfortunately permeates every aspect of our society, you know, whether it's your work organization, whether it's the media institutions, all of the institutions within our economic system. And so – you know, this is the crap that gets put out to the masses out there, okay? And you know, I would really urge everybody to look beyond the corporate media, look beyond the Zuffa shills who depend on constant interplay between themselves and the organization. Support shows like Eddie Goldman. Eddie Goldman's been doing this for longer than anybody, going back to, 2001, even before that, he covered MMA from the beginning. Eddie's an authority, okay? So support shows like that, support shows like this. You know, even the Fight Opinion, some of the material out there, you know, there are a few good sites here and there. Okay, so that's it. That's it for this week's edition of Carson's Corner. Make sure to support the, what is the site called again? The latest MMA news. LatestMMAnews.com, I believe. Yeah, make sure to support that site. And make sure to support Carson's Corner. You can friend me on Facebook at Facebook.com/BobCarsonMMA. You could follow me on Twitter at Twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA. We're working to put on a show every Monday. Every Monday we'll try to put out a show for you here. Okay? So until next time, ladies and gentlemen, show some respect.